Work shouldn't feel like a drag, and you shouldn't have to sacrifice your soul for a job you love. Determined to rethink the future of work, she's out of her depth on purpose. With fresh ideas, interviews, and stories from her life on the road, meet Europe's newest digital nomad, Blair Palmer.
Hello, and welcome to episode 76 of A Brilliant Gamble. I hope you are really well. Last year, I was privileged to speak to Emily and Kathleen of Being Boss. Being Boss is a podcast, but it's more than that. It's a network, a community. They've got tons of resources to help creatives become their own boss. These ladies are cool. Not only did they create Being Boss, which is now one of the top rated podcasts on iTunes, but they also both independently run their own successful businesses, and they're both mums. I thought it was time to bring that interview back. So this week we're going to hear from them again. Hear that interview that I did last year a second time because I really think it's worth it. They're going to help you to get into the entrepreneurial mindset. If you're thinking about going it alone, starting your own side hustle, or leaving the perceived security of your job in corporate world to start your own business, this will show you the warts and all about the difference between taking home a salary and making your own money with your own company. Together, we bust some myths and flawed beliefs about running a business and the personal development you may need to undertake to get the most from turning left at the crossroads rather than carrying straight on. I'm sure when you listen to these two, you'll become just as big fans as I am. And so without further ado, let's go to the interview.
Emily and Kathleen, welcome.
Thank you for having us. We're excited to be here.
It's so exciting. I'm so excited to talk to you. I'm like a major fan. You have kept me company on long drives, on airplanes, even if I might say in hotel rooms. You've been great company.
And we love keeping you guys company.
Oh yeah.
No, I always love when people are like, you know, you help me go to sleep at night, or I hang out with you while I'm washing dishes, or and sometimes weird things, and it can get a little odd. But overall, we love that we get to sort of follow people around in their lives while sitting over here while you guys do your dishes.
Exactly. Well, when you listen back to this, maybe you'll be doing your dishes and we've got each other back. So that's good.
Probably so.
there's a lot I want to ask you about, so much actually, but I just wanted to kick off by explaining why I wanted you on the show with some stats, actually, some cool stats. So 48% of Americans want to be entrepreneurs. 48%, I find that extraordinary. 63% of 20-somethings want to start their own business. And the over 55s are the fastest growing demographic of entrepreneurs at this moment in time. So I just think this whole kind of running your own business thing is massive right now. And your Being Boss audience are these people, creative entrepreneurs who've either left a bigger company or they never wanted to be in one in the first place. Well, they do kind of have a proper job, but they also have their side hustle going on. What's going on? Like, why this draw to going it alone?
I have a couple of thoughts about this. And I think that with the age of the internet, and the internet's been around for a while, but Emily and I were just talking about this the other day, how in the grand scheme of things, it's still kind of brand new. And we jumped into building online businesses really at the beginning. Like, we were imagining ourselves being little old ladies one day telling our grandchildren how we were pioneers of the online business world. And so I think putting that into perspective is really important whenever it comes to this growth in entrepreneurship. And I think that the internet for as much as people slam it, for as much as people talk about how we're losing face-to-face connection and, you know, fake news and all the things that the internet, haters, trolls, all the things that the internet is bad for, what it is really great for is connecting us to each other, connecting, making knowledge accessible at our fingertips. And it's really almost democratized our ability to be entrepreneurs. You don't have to have gone to business school to figure it out. It's just kind of the wild, wild west when it comes to making up what you want your work and life to look like. And so that's really the message that Emily and I are sharing on our podcast and in our own work and lives.
I agree with that. I think the internet has definitely given us an avenue to go at entrepreneurship in a way that has not been available to just people before. We have the ability to sell ourselves and to sell our wares or whatever it may be to people all over the world via the internet. So we are able to tap into larger markets and different geographic regions and all of those things because of this tool that we have. But I think another side of that also, at least this is what I'm hoping it is a desire for people to take back responsibility for themselves, where you are not only responsible for what it is that you're creating and selling, but you're also responsible for your own hours that you work, or the benefits that you have, or how it is that you work and who it is that you work for. I think that over the past couple of decades, the workforce has definitely went much more corporate. People just get corporate jobs. But I feel as going back to what was happening before there were corporations, with this idea that you are responsible for yourself and you're not going to give away all of your power to big corporations who don't know who you are. And I don't think that all corporations are like that now, but I think there has been enough of that, that it's driving a move toward entrepreneurship that is on some level probably a product of that.
Yeah, and I, you know, Emily, hearing you say that got me thinking about even just generational trends. And I know that millennials also get a really bad rap, but I think that part of, I'm at the very like oldest age of millennial, born in 82. So I kind of ride that line a little bit, but I think that millennials get a bad rap for kind of being the me generation, and I'm a special snowflake. But what I think that that has lent itself to is defining what success looks like for you. So I recently heard that, not to go off on too much of a millennial tangent, but that millennials aren't moving out sooner. They're not getting their driver's license. They're not getting their driver's licenses the day they turn 16, like probably Emily and I myself were. We really crave that independence, but I think that what millennials do bring to the equation is a new way of thinking and a little bit of innovation. So I think that your statistics were really interesting, Blair, as far as that over 50 crowd being the ones that are in this movement as well, because I would have thought it was more of a millennial thing. I wonder if the 50 plus crowd is getting inspiration or motivation from these trends. I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's super interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if that is true, because I wonder if it's almost infectious upwards. So where in the past you either would have had generations fighting against each other, so if your older generation did it, you would do the opposite. Now it's like young people, or younger than me, are doing stuff that the rest of us are sitting around thinking, hang on a minute, why are they allowed to take a sabbatical and go and travel the world, you know, and then walk back into their job after a couple of years? Why are they allowed to live rent-free, you know, with their parents? How about we move in with our kids and we live rent-free and we start our little business up that way?
Yes, I love that. That makes me feel better. My daughter yesterday was like, whenever I'm older, we're going to move to the beach and I'm going to buy a house and you guys are going to live with me. And David and I were like, we don't know that you're going to want to, or that we're going to want to, but that totally paints a picture that I could see happening one day. So that makes me feel much better. But I totally agree with that. And I also really think that also plays into the idea of taking responsibility for yourself. I feel like possibly that older crowd is looking back at their lives spent, you know, working for the man or working for someone who isn't solely themselves, and thinking, now I have the chance to really do the thing I want to do, so let's do it. So I think there are probably multiple things playing into all of those. And no matter what is the biggest factor, I also find it fascinating.
Can I share some a thought that I'm having on like corporations as well? Because Emily and I want to build a multimedia conglomerate with Being Boss, and we currently have 7 people on our team. So we are certainly not just solopreneurs. We have each other. We have our business partners. We have a lot of things going on. And I think that the entrepreneurial spirit is also creating new kinds of corporations. So I'm thinking about a lot of the tech startups right now, how they offer flexible hours or better maternity leave, paternity leave. They're offering benefits that really lend themselves to the entrepreneurial spirit, being able to work remote so that you can work from anywhere. So I think that the rules are not just changing for entrepreneurs, but the rules are changing for how they run their businesses, from Google to the little mom and pop shops to things like Being Boss and our size and the kinds of companies that we're trying to build ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, you know, listeners to this show will have heard me go on and on about some of these changes that are coming. And it's a warning, really, in a way, to those big businesses and small businesses who think that the way companies have been run for the last 250 years it's kind of how it's going to carry on. You know, they'll be the big boss and, you know, as you say, we'll work for the man and that's how we'll do it. Actually, I'm giving a speech next week to a big, really big 60,000 person organization. I'm not speaking to 60,000 people. I'm speaking to the UK guys, but that's the size of the business. And they are rolling out self-management within the organization. So they're not imposing it, because actually you can't impose self-management. That's kind of the point. But they are rolling out these concepts. And this is a big company. And I think they realize if they don't do it, they're going to lose so many people who go off to SpaceX or to start their own little businesses or to join some funky little business like yours and grow that. And I think they realize they're leeching this talent if they're not careful.
Yeah, definitely. I think that piece, that sort of self-management, is one of the things that I've definitely lended to the success of our own team. And it's something that we obviously don't push, because again, you can't push self-management, but we give our team as much room as possible to work the way they want to work and to manage their own systems and processes and to show up whenever they want to. More or less, we all know when we're going to be around. We all know that we're most productive when we're all around together. But they make the decision to be there whenever we can all be most productive. And I absolutely see that as one of the points that has made our team so happy and so flexible and so productive. Kathleen and I were just saying, like, our team is able to produce so much, and we run with a bar that is so high, but it's also super chill. We just unplugged for the past 2 weeks for vacation, and our team just did their things, and it was perfectly fine. We didn't have to check in. We didn't have to do anything, because we've set up the systems to allow them to completely self-manage. And even though they work for a company that tells people that they can work for themselves, they like working for us, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is so cool. So let's just backtrack a little bit, because I wasn't even clear. I get the impression that you two have never worked for a big company, that you've always done your own thing. Is that right?
We have both had, I guess the last job I had was in college. So I worked for a big box store, or I guess like a small box store, a chain of retail stores, in a couple of different locations. I opened a couple of like fashion retailers. I did some management of some, you know, retail stores. And, but I quit that during college and never looked back.
And then right out of college, I actually was working as a senior art director at an advertising agency. And I feel like I was there for 5 years. And I started to see this trend of what was happening online, just even through having my own personal blog, and really starting to see the opportunities to define my work and my life on my own terms. It was terrifying to quit that job at the advertising agency, but within the first year, I was making the same salary on my own as I was as a senior art director. And I've never looked back since. I'm basically unhirable now.
Same. No one wants to hire me.
No.
No, everyone probably wants to hire you they just can't afford it.
That too. That definitely too.
No, I mean, could you even imagine? You know, I've been doing this now for 17 years. I am definitely unhirable. I would be a pain in the ass to any company. And the thing is, they want that from me in little bits. That's why they would but they don't want that every day, all day.
Definitely. I totally agree with that. And I feel that as well. I feel like I have this dream kind of going into retail stores and just telling them how it's done and like consulting, helping them set it up, helping them get their systems and management in place for sure. But I could never be someone's manager. Like they would fire me because I would be a total pain in their ass.
So tell me a bit about your audience, because you know your audience really well. I mean, your community is so vibrant. It really feels, you call it the clubhouse, and it really has that kind of clubhouse feel. And then you meet people face to face, which, you know, shocker in this day and age, where they actually come and meet you in person. What kind of people are they?
Oh, they're so cool.
Amazing. We have the best tribe.
We do. They're all creatives. They're all photographers or makers or web designers or graphic designers. We have a lot of coaches. We have people who are like us in that they've worked for corporations or maybe even not and decided that they wanted to take their life into their own hands and try to start a business. Because we do talk about, you know, there's a difference between a hobbyist, someone who likes to make on the side or coach on the side or design on the side. And there's people who put the intention into it to actually build a business. And the people we most connect with are the ones who are the entrepreneurs. They want to make a business, a profitable business out of selling their skills, whatever they may be. And so those are our people. A lot of them are obviously interested in building families or building families. So they're also having to juggle what it's like to build a family and a business at the same time. And they want to do work that matters and make an impact. So it's not just about, you know, getting a client, designing the website, and then ending the project and it being over. It's about having this business with a purpose that gives back or nurtures relationships or gives to a community. Our people are not only creatives, but they're creatives who want meaning out of their creativity, which makes them a really great group of people.
Yeah, our people also really want to be able to be who they are 100% of the time. So they want to buck the norm of the, you know, rules that have been set of what professional looks like. And I'm putting professional in air quotes because that has changed. So they really want to blend who they are into the work that they do in order to find creative fulfillment. Because Emily and I, myself, we can both attest to the fact that a job is still a job. There are days whenever we're not loving every single minute of it. And that's like kind of an entrepreneurial myth I want to bust. It's not always puppies and rainbows. And if it is, you're probably not doing it quite right. Like there should be days where you kind of want to throw up a little bit, or you think that this is just too hard, or it's too much, or I have to make another big decision. But at the end of the day, it really is about knowing that you showed up as you are throughout your entire day, from your morning workout to a podcast interview, to a meeting with your team, to a client-facing meeting, that you are just able to be who you are. And so kind of a really funny small example of this is that I'm looking at all three of us sitting here and we all three have curly hair. And there was once upon a time that having like a wild curly hair, you know, and especially like I think women of color can especially speak to this, but for the three of us, just having curly hair was kind of seen as unprofessional in the workplace. We would have to straighten it or put it up in a bun, and we're all sitting here with like wild curly hair. So that's just like kind of a very small, you know, anecdote as to what this might look like to blend who you are into the work that you do and to be yourself 100% of the time, from your outward style to your inner values. That's something that Emily and I are always preaching to our audience, is really looking at your values. And some of our clubhouse members will ask us, okay, are these values for my business or for myself? And we're like, go ahead and circle them for yourself and for your business. But is there a difference? You know, if you need to approach it that way, sure. But at the end of the day, we want your values to be the same in your family and in your work and in your life and how you approach all the things that you do. So that's the biggest thing, is that we want to help people blend who they are into the work that they do. And we want to help them make a profit doing what they love. There is, you know, this idea that if you're doing what you love, you can't make good money. And we've even seen that from surveying our audience. A lot of them really only want to make between $30,000 and $60,000 a year. That was shocking to me and Emily. We were thinking that everyone wanted to be this six-figure entrepreneur. And that's kind of a number that's going around the internet. And they're like, no, no, I just want to be able to pay my bills. So we want to empower them to be able to pay their bills. And we want them to know that there's no shame in making that six or seven or eight figures.
You know, right, because we definitely want them to pay their bills, but we also want them to retire. And that's something I feel like we're preaching just as much as being who you are, is be who you are, get paid, but also think about retirement.
Well, you know, it's really interesting as you say that, because I think a lot of people, so as people move up in a bigger business, they are expected to exchange, by and large, they're expected to exchange their quality of life, their amount of time at home, their sense of peace for money, so, and power. So you move up and you say, okay, the sacrifice I'm making is I won't have much of a life, but I'll have more influence and I will have more money. And so when you work for yourself, I wonder if there is a thing of, well, if I'm enjoying it, then what's the sacrifice I'm making that means I deserve the big bucks? This is kind of this, you talked about myths. I think this is really one of the myths that are hardwired into our society over 200, 300 years of industrial thinking. And actually, it really messes with your brain when you think, I'm allowed to earn money and enjoy earning it. That's it. That really, busting that myth is huge, right?
Totally, 100%.
Yeah. And I also think another thing that plays into this is I think for many generations and maybe forever, I mean, the idea has always been work hard and get paid. And so you are busting your ass at whatever it may be to get paid. And one of the things that Kathleen and I are always, always preaching is don't work harder, work smarter, because there are ways that you can systemize things and delegate things or just be super discerning with what it is that you decide to do with your time that allows you to work smarter, get as just as much done, or make just as much impact with what you're doing, or with actually doing less. And then you're able to make more money without killing yourself in the process. So I've definitely felt in the past couple of years, for me, being one of those people that have grown up in a household where it was all about working hard. It didn't matter how smart it was. Actually, smart was probably bad because you weren't working as hard, to break myself of that mindset as well. And I've totally found my groove in the past 2 or 3 years. And in finding the groove of working smarter, not harder, I work less and get paid more. So, and I don't feel guilty about it. I'm very happy about it. And I'm able to bring that sort of expertise and perspective to the people that we talk to. So let that be a myth that we can hopefully break here as well, is that it doesn't have to be working hard. You can make the same amount of impact by working smarter.
So you mentioned, Kathleen, about this myth that needs to be busted about how you know, we're all living in fairyland, and you know, actually there are days when it's tough. What are some of the other misconceptions you think that you come across where amongst people who don't work in this way, that you know, the people that say, oh, I could never run my own business, what are some of the assumptions they're making about us, and are they right?
Well, I don't know about the assumptions about us necessarily, but some assumptions about themselves. One of the things I see the most is just benefits, wanting someone else to pay your health insurance. I think it's a really tricky topic to talk about. And even by the time this episode goes live, who knows what it's going to be. But there are a lot of creative entrepreneurs out there paying for their own health insurance, and sometimes they're paying just as much as they are working for somebody else. So I feel like this fit situation is kind of a a trap that some corporations, or not even corporations, just this mindset of benefits is really super limiting to people striking out on their own. No one could ever give me the benefits of 6 weeks of vacation a year, for example. You know what I mean? And so my benefits I'm able to create working for myself far outweigh the benefits I would get from a corporation or someone else simply paying my health insurance. I'll send out an email to be able to pay my health insurance for the month, if that makes sense. So that's one thing. But I think that there are some of the other myths about working for ourselves might be just, well, this isn't a myth so much, but I think that one of the things that keeps people from working for themselves is this feeling of uncertainty. And they would rather, oh, this is something I see a lot. People who have an entrepreneurial spirit in a corporation wishing they could get fired. I think that this is so funny because they still want to give the decision and the control to someone else. If I could just get fired, it would give me the opportunity to finally try my entrepreneurial idea. Well, why don't you stop putting your decisions in the hands of someone else who is an entrepreneur themselves and probably freaking out themselves? Like, I guess the main thing I want to try to say here is that security is an illusion. Whether you're working for someone else or working for yourself, there is no such thing as security. You can have $1 million in the bank and still feel incredibly insecure. So that's, I think, a little bit of a myth or mindset or misconception.
People think that, you know, entrepreneurs, we don't know where our next paycheck is coming from. And like, and what does it all look and feel like? You could go broke at any moment or whatever. If you're working for a big company, you can get fired at any moment. And at least as an entrepreneur, if you're good at what you do, you would see it coming. And you would have to make a lot of wrong decisions in order for your business to fall apart. Whereas if you're working for a corporation, you may feel like you're secure, but your manager could just up one day and hear from someone above him who has heard from someone above him that they need to make cuts and you're the one, and you could never see it coming. Like, that's not security. Then there goes your 401k and all of your benefits and all of these things. I would feel less secure in a big company than I do working for myself, because I see it coming. I know what's happening. I know all the things that would have to go wrong, and I trust myself to fix the things that would go wrong before they start snowballing into me losing all of my security.
Yeah, I you're right. You know, it's that security thing that, as you say, stops a lot of people. It is an illusion. And I've seen the thing where people, so they wait to be fired, and they also wait sometimes for years to be made redundant. So they'll get this payout, and somehow this money that they get, firstly, will make up for the 2 or 3 years they were waiting in a job that they hated for the money. But also somehow that this bunch of money will mean that they don't have to go through any pain when they start their own business. And you know, you can burn through that redundancy payment really quickly if you don't have a good business in place. So even that feels like security, and even that is fake.
For sure. It's definitely one of the things that we run into most with our listeners, and especially our Clubhouse members, is, or the ones especially that are leaving large companies to start their own business, is this mindset shift around security and how actually what you're building will be more secure than the thing you're probably leaving. And most people don't see it that way, and that's fine, but we totally take it upon ourselves to show them the way.
Do you think that that big business... So I don't want to set big business up against entrepreneurs. And in fact, big business are my clients. And, you know, a lot of people who run their own businesses work in partnership with big companies, and all credit to those big companies for working with little consultancies and sole traders and things, because they're getting something kind of special. So I don't want to set that up, but I do wonder if they, as a generalization, misunderstand a little what it's like to run your own business, or what kinds of people run their own business. Is that something that you've ever thought about or that you've experienced?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, and just to say, Kathleen and I also love big businesses. Amazon is one of my favorite businesses of all time, for sure. However, I do hear they don't treat their customer or their employees super well. Yeah. That may just be hearsay. So, but I do think that there is enough of a difference between big companies and small or micro businesses that there probably is a misunderstanding as to what the goals are. Whenever you're a big company, one of your number one things is simply profit, at the cost of so many things that small businesses or micro businesses, you know, can hold their values above profits a lot more easily than, you know, a couple of old white dudes in a boardroom could. So I do think that there is a little bit of a difference. There's probably a little bit of a different hierarchy of responsibilities and I don't know, just the choices you have to make. I haven't had enough conversations with those people to really like get into a great debate and give you some good insider information. But I know that from my own interactions with people who are more in tune with big businesses, sometimes they look at me like I'm a little nuts, and I'm okay with that.
I think that the thing I see a lot are people feeling like they're not credentialed enough or experienced enough, or they don't have a business degree. Like, that's always the thing. Well, I can't be an entrepreneur because I don't have a business degree. And we don't have business degrees, but like I was saying at the beginning of our conversation, with the internet, there is so much knowledge at your fingertips. But all of that said, I will say that entrepreneurship isn't for everybody. And I don't think that necessarily everybody should be an entrepreneur. Sometimes we can create things that are so much bigger than ourselves whenever we are working on a team. So for example, my husband is working to become a self-driving car engineer. He couldn't do that by himself. He's going to be, you know, much better serving the world and serving his own skill set to be working for someone like Ford or Mercedes or BMW. I'm hoping for Mercedes. I want that car. But, you know, that's just an example of the fact that not everyone is not necessarily cut out to be an entrepreneur, but maybe that's just not in their goals. Maybe they can get more done by being on a team and working for somebody else. But my hope is kind of what you were saying, as far as, you know, let's not be anti-big business necessarily, is that big businesses will take cues from people-driven and purpose-driven entrepreneurs who do put values first. Mm-hmm. And I think that that could get us out of so many systemic and political problems if corporations would have more of a conscience.
I also think that one of the things that I love most about small business as related to big business is our ability to be nimble and fast with making decisions and implementing. Whenever shit hits the fan, or whenever we decide to make changes, or if we, whatever we decide, it's so much easier for us to turn around and do the thing. Whereas big companies don't have that super nimble quality. And I think that's something that even as we grow, Kathleen and I keep in mind consistently, like, we can grow, but we will only grow to the point where we're able to stay nimble. Anything larger than that, at least for us, at least at this moment, isn't worth the trouble. So that is one of the things that I do love. And one of the big differences that I do see is that small businesses are able to stay so much more nimble than big companies.
So, okay, I wanted to kind of change the direction a little bit, because on the podcast, on the Being Boss podcast, you interview such amazing people. And one of the themes, so some of it is proper business strategic, how to run your business, how to get better at branding yourself, your company, all of that. But a lot of it is more of the personal development side of things. And some of the stuff that you do is really quite out there. I certainly would be out there for the big companies we're talking about. So firstly, I'm just curious about how important your own self-development has been to you as you've been growing your businesses.
Yeah, so earlier we were talking about the insecurity of being an entrepreneur, but how security is an illusion across the board. And so for me, becoming an entrepreneur forced me to cultivate faith that I had not had before. And speaking even on a spiritual level, I had identified as an atheist for many, many years. And it's not like I became an entrepreneur and then was born again by any means. It was more of like, okay, I've got to surrender a certain amount of control. You know, like I can only hustle so much. And this is something I think about daily, and I don't quite have the answers, but something I've been thinking about a lot lately is, you know, where does the hustle end and the faith begin? And where does free will meet with this idea that there is a universal plan, or that the universe is rooting for me or has my back, right? And so I had to cultivate different rituals and practices around expressing and cultivating the faith that I needed as an entrepreneur, but even as a mom. You know, like we were saying earlier, work and life is so blended. I have a 3-year-old, and that unlocked my heart in whole new ways, but also unlocked a lot of fear and insecurity on a whole new level as well. And so for me, using tools like journaling or even dream interpretation is a really great way for me to tap into my own intuition. And if you listen to any entrepreneur, even the big guys, I'm obsessed with the podcast, How I Built This right now. If you listen to, 9 out of 10 of them talk about gut feelings and luck of the draw. And so I'm just trying to cultivate more luck and intuition so that whenever those gut feelings do come up, I'm able to listen to them and I'm able to have faith in them.
I completely agree with that. And whenever Kathleen and I started Being Boss, and especially whenever we went through a rebrand about a year after we started, we were very intentional about, you know, at least when we started, about it being just very business focused. We're going to be very straightforward, very, you know, like tactics and actionable to-dos and just the women who know how to talk business sort of thing. And whenever we did our rebrand, though, we had had several conversations with, or had lots of conversations with some of our listeners. We had done our first vacation to New Orleans, our Being Boss vacation to New Orleans. And Kathleen and I had kind of chose that location because it has a spirit that draws us both to that place very much. We're like, let's go hang out together. Let's invite some listeners. 75 people later, we were there with a whole bunch of our listeners, and it was a blast. And Kathleen and I are like sneaking off to get tarot readings or whatever. And then everyone wants to go get tarot readings. We had no idea. We had no idea that all of our people were just as woo as we were. And so whenever we did our rebrand, we were like, you know, how much of this do we actually want to bring into it? Because, you know, behind the scenes, Kathleen and I are always talking about our dreams and what card we pulled and, hey, what crystal's in your bra right now? Like all these fun, ridiculous things that are very personal to us. But we were really intentional that whenever it comes to the content we provide, we do want to keep it pretty straight-laced. However, it would be doing ourselves a disservice to tell people to be 100% who they are if we weren't infusing a little more of who we actually are into the work that we're doing. So we do allow ourselves to pepper some of that in, into our content and into how we talk to people, especially in the clubhouse. You know, we do some intention settings. We talk about the moon a little bit. And not enough to ever make anyone uncomfortable who's not in it with us, but enough to show people that there are things outside of maybe your realm of understanding that you can explore. Because if there's one thing that we recognize in successful entrepreneurs, it's being open-minded. And it's understanding that you don't know everything, and there are potentially people around you who know some tips and tricks that you do not. And if that's around setting intentions with the moon, then so be it. But we do try to keep enough of a lid on some of that so that we're not totally repelling everyone. But again, we don't want to do ourselves that disservice, and our people eat it up in ways that we never expected.
Yeah. And we also don't want to be apologetic about our, you know, fringe brand of spirituality. But we also want to be open to everybody. So just like if we were Buddhist podcasters, we wouldn't want to just appeal to other Buddhists, or if we were Christian podcasters, just appealing to other Christians. So anytime we do mention some of our tools for cultivating faith or intuition, we mention that these are tools. We're not necessarily using tarot decks to tell our future. We're not necessarily looking at our astrological charts to, you know, say it was written in the sky that this was going to happen, though sometimes we do.
But no, we use it.
We use it as tools for inquiry and tools to pique curiosity and tools to prompt us to see things that we might not be seeing. So we're hiring top-notch business coaches, but we're also visiting the blue-haired, dreaded lady in Jackson Square in New Orleans to give us some insights as well.
I wonder if that's part of the creativity, because, you know, we if you've ever had an idea, it's come from multiple sources at once, sort of coming together and making something that wasn't there before.
So that's called synchronicity and magic, just throwing that out there.
A little bit of magic. So if you don't expose yourself to that stuff, I mean, not necessarily to that, but to anything that's outside of your normal realm, then you're never going to have ideas except for those that are within your normal realm. You're never going to break out of that. So I wonder if it is kicked off some of that stuff by people who are more comfortable with being open to new ideas, because that's where their inspiration comes from. And then it becomes more mainstream later. I mean, I can't tell you how many CEOs I've met in the last 2 or 3 years who have a meditation practice, and that would not have been the case 5 years ago, even let alone 10 years ago. So it does seem to filter through, but it has to start somewhere. And I wonder if it kind of does start in the creative entrepreneurial world.
I mean, I think that there's a history of spirituality that has been very dogmatic and has a lot of rules around it. And I think just like in the entrepreneurial world, in the spiritual world that we're hanging in, people are defining their own faith. They're bucking all the rules and all the norms and making a blend of the kind of faith that they want to have, whatever that looks like to them. And, you know, it was, for so long, people have been saying, no, you can't do that. And I think that we're of a generation that is saying, you can't tell me what to do. So that applies to work, that applies to life, that applies to spirituality. And so I think that there's some of that in there.
I do definitely see creatives as being the people who are most easily expressive with those sorts of things, because, and even not even generational thing, I just think like a creative person thing where we are like, you know, we're going to break the rules. We're going to do what we want. We don't care what you say or do about it. And I do think that a lot of those things, you know, come from that. I think, you know, I feel like yoga at the moment was the thing that kind of began the sort of mindfulness and meditation, and even who wrote the book about manifesting that? I can't remember.
The law of attraction, Abraham Hicks.
Yes, that exactly. And so then this idea of you know, thinking what you want and getting it has came around. And if you want to talk about some magic, like there you go right there. So I think these things have slowly started becoming mainstream with those very basic principles, getting it started. And it's starting to flower out into more diverse things like crystals or tarot or whatever else you guys can think of to get into. And I do think that the creatives are the one who are doing it and are the least apologetic about it. And then everyone else, hopefully, will take a cue and be a little less afraid of their own tarot cards too.
Or even just a little less cynical. Like, you don't have to believe in magic. I mean, you could be a total atheist and still enjoy pulling a tarot card just to get a few insights into something that you haven't thought about before. And I want to, you know, just mention in this conversation that Emily has a background in science, and myself as well. Like, we both love and appreciate science and methodical thinking and logical thinking, but we really love blending that with a little bit of magic.
I should tell you, well, I probably shouldn't tell you, but the episode you did on the tarot, the first one with Biddy, I put off listening to it for weeks. It was on my phone, but I wasn't listening to it because I was like, I'm not going to be interested in that. That's just one of those I'm going to skip over, but I didn't take it off. And then a few weeks later, I listened to it and I thought it was so cool. And then a couple of weeks later, my two business besties and I had one of our regular get-togethers. And I said, shall we do this? Shall we kick it off by pulling our cards? And I downloaded the app and we did it. And it was really amazing. It opened up a conversation about stuff that we would not have gone in that direction if it hadn't been for the cards. So whether you believe that the app is just randomly spewing out cards that could, you know, nothing to do with spirituality, or whether you really feel like you're manifesting it, it kind of doesn't matter because you've opened up this whole area for conversation that wasn't there before.
Yeah, I like to think of pulling a tarot card as bringing a completely unbiased opinion or insight into a conversation, and one that won't argue, well, maybe it will argue with you sometimes, but one that's not, it has no outside agenda. It's just like, all right, you want to do this project, pull a card, you get, I can't even, like, the moon, because one of my favorites, you know, how can the moon and the idea of shadow or sort of secrets or whatever come into this project? And it just brings an outside perspective. Sometimes we can get so inside our little box that it can be hard to see anyone else's perspective. And you may not want to bring your husband or your mom or your even your business bestie into that conversation because they're biased or you may feel judged or whatever. And I feel like the cards are a really great tool for just getting outside insight. But I love that you said that about that episode because we had several people say the exact same thing where it came up in their feed. They weren't going to listen to it and they finally did. And then it ended up being one of their favorites. And I think, and that's key, like staying open, listening to something you normally wouldn't listen to will open you up to things and expand your horizons either by giving you something new to do or giving you someone else's insight, even if you choose to never do it. I think the world is too filled with people who are too closed-minded to do anything great. And I love that you decided to take a listen.
Thank you. It was great. It was great. I must say that I did get a bit obsessed about it for a few days and I was kind of doing the cards like every 20 minutes, what next, what next? And then I thought, okay, I actually have to go on sort of decompress from this. I have to switch it off and come back to it when I've chilled out a little bit about it.
You know what's funny about you saying that is that I haven't pulled a card for about a month. And so at the beginning of the year, I was pulling a card a day and doing a lot of readings. And for me, that stuff really goes in cycles. And even just, you know, reading self-help books like Brené Brown or reading business books, I have to really approach those things in seasons because it can start to become a chore or it can start to become overwhelming. So I don't think it's a bad thing that you became obsessed for 3 days and then chilled on it a little bit. And I think that you have to just find your own rhythm with those things.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing I wanted to talk to you both about, we haven't really talked much about it, but your audience isn't exclusively women, but it has attracted a lot of women to you. And I'm really confused about why in bigger companies, it's such a struggle for women to get into really senior leadership positions. And they seem to, either they lack confidence or there's something in the system that makes it difficult for them to fulfill their potential, whatever it might be, institutionalized sexism, and not just women, but any kind of group that doesn't fit the sort of stereotype. And yet in smaller businesses, women are out there, they're running their own thing, they're taking risks, they're being creative, they're getting out into the world, they're demonstrating huge confidence. And I'm wondering, the confusion is, how come women are struggling to do that in business, but out in the world, they have all the qualities that big businesses would really love them to bring in?
So many things. So many things. I mean, the word that comes to mind is patriarchy. I think that there are a lot of men that are really intimidated. I feel like there's just some systemic inherited sexism that's probably going to take us decades, if not centuries longer, to bust out of. I mean, this is just my own personal feelings on it. So if, you know, men aren't letting us play by their rules in a system that's been set up for them, well, then we're going to go out and play by our own rules. Watch us.
Right. I agree. And Because I am the one who always goes against Kathleen's patriarchy answer to everything. I will step aside from patriarchy and just say rules general in general, because I agree with that part. I agree with all of it always, Kathleen. But whenever you're looking just at rules, they are institutionally driven by this like male powered system, and we don't want to or care to. And at some point there's a breaking point and women will walk away. Because I do agree, we have all the skills and abilities and whatnot, but why play by your rules when we can make our own and break them as we see fit without being judged for it? So I do agree that, well, okay. Actually, I'm going to go a little bit deeper. I also think that women have been so much more driven by rules for so much longer that I'm hoping that we're just at a point where we're going to say screw all the rules and go do our own thing. Because, you know, I think about, I was watching, it's like the previews for Pirates of the Caribbean, and they're making jokes about seeing the girls' ankles because women couldn't show their ankles, sort of thing. Like those sorts of really stupid rules that have ruled our world for so many generations. I think we're just at a place where we don't have to play by them anymore. So we won't.
Yeah. I really get that. And I feel it's a shame in a way, because it should be possible for women. And of course, a lot of women do bring all of their talents into business and they do really well and they make a really big difference. But it does seem to be harder. And it just seems a shame that companies are missing out on all this boss stuff that we have, and that your audience and my mates and all of that we're doing every day. And yet somehow it's just really difficult to bring it into big companies.
You know, coming back to our conversation about working harder, I think that kind of work hard mentality and that 40 hours a week of sitting at a desk, which, you know, comes from the Industrial Revolution, like that, they're just very masculine dominated philosophies. So not even talking about men and women, but masculine energy and feminine energy. And so obviously women are going to embody more feminine energy. And I think that the feminine power and skills like intuition, for example, just have not been valued for decades in big business. And hopefully that starts to turn around.
But if not, we'll go build our own businesses and they'll be great. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think another part of that is simply the stress factor. I mean, if anyone knows how to handle stress, look at a mom with a couple of kids on her hips and then send her into a boardroom where she's then, you know, required to handle the stress created by, you know, this masculine dominated field, whatever it may be, because it is big business. And she knows where she needs to put her energy, and it's going to be in her own creative endeavors where she can make the impact she wants without having to babysit a grown man or whoever it may be. So I think there are lots of little nuances like that, you know, in day-to-day may not be huge factors, but built up over generations have simply created an environment where women are gladly recognizing that they can make just as much of a career and life for themselves being their own boss and doing their own thing than, you know, sitting under anyone else to do what they want to do.
One of the things, we're kind of coming towards the end of the interview, but there's a couple of things I really, really wanted to ask you about. And one was to do with brand. So I was listening to your archived Brené Brown, which I now realize you ran because you guys were on holiday. And so, so you stuck one in from the archive, which I'm so grateful for, because I had not heard it. I knew you'd spoken to her, but I hadn't heard the interview until last week. And she was describing how when she had worked with you guys on her brand, she had just found it one of the most painful experiences of her whole life, which surprised me, because I would have thought that she would be really, you know, I also found it one of the most, every time I do it, in fact, I find it one of the most painful experiences of my life. But I was surprised that she did, because, you know, she's so elevated spiritually and personally and all of that. But anyway, what it made me wonder is that this process, because she then went on to say that she goes back to that work constantly, and they all do in her organization. And it made me wonder whether, as painful as it is, if wouldn't it be great if everybody, whether you run a business or not, kind of had to go through that process, because it requires you to look deep inside yourself. And as you said, Emily, about values, it requires you to ask those questions and then to then live in alignment with that brand or with that self that you've identified. Is this something, you know, both of you work in the kind of brand field to one extent or another. Is it something that you think, painful as it is, it's a kind of life experience not to be missed?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. A lot of people have referred to the Braid method, and which is what Brené went through. A lot of people have referred to the Braid method as brand therapy. And so that's it feels a lot like digging deep, so that what's reflected on the outside is authentic. And I know that word gets used a lot, but it's the most appropriate one to use here, is what is authentic to what's inside. And it's something that Emily and I take our Being Boss Clubhouse members through as well. It's not the Braid method necessarily, and it's not about necessarily an external facing brand, but it is about aligning your values with your business model. And, you know, I was saying earlier, if more corporations had a conscience, and even if more freelancers had purpose, they wouldn't be taking on projects where they feel like just a pixel pusher. They would be positioning themselves as experts and as authorities, and they would be doing what it is that they really want to be doing and what they're best at. So yeah, absolutely. It's a process. You know, a branding process is so much deeper than just your logo or even just your website. A branding process is really going to help you understand who it is and what you want to be known for and how to properly express that on the outside.
And it's also certainly a life-changing experience, as ridiculous as that can sound, because it's a place in your business where you are deciding to invest money and time to pour yourself into someone else and then have them give something back to you. And what we found very often is that this is a major milestone in your business. And so people have this like transformational moment, which is by no means a insignificant thing in these people's lives. And, you know, for this reason, Kathleen got life coach training, because she realized, like, these people are going through so much more than getting a logo. Like, these people are going through these life changes. And is one of the reasons why I added significant amount of coaching to my website process whenever I was doing websites for creatives as well, because it wasn't about just creating a thing and handing it to them. It was walking them through it, because their life was changing in this moment. And it is, so many people can go into it very flippantly, not recognizing what's ahead of them and what this change will signify. But as pros at it, Kathleen and I definitely see what's coming. And oftentimes we'll even see these big moments in their business paired with big moments in their lives. So they're getting married, or they're getting divorced, or they're pregnant with their first kid, or they're moving across the country, whatever it may be. So very often these huge moments and milestones in their business will correspond with big moments or milestones in their lives, which just adds to the transformation. And again, like, that may sound really ridiculous, but it's totally something that we've seen time and time again. It's not just about getting a new logo. It's about deciding who you're going to be and committing to going towards it. And that is a big deal.
Yeah. And so in the case of Brené Brown, she was about to go on Oprah. Talk about a life-changing moment, right? And so you have to be set up. It's a question that Emily and I ask ourselves all the time. If we were to go on to Oprah tomorrow, what is it that we want to be known for? And what do we want the viewers to do next? And if that's not a branding exercise, I don't know what is.
That would freak me out. The idea that I have to go on Oprah tomorrow, I'm so not ready to talk to her. But I think it's a great question. And like I say, I think it's a question that you know, it doesn't matter whether you're running your own business or not, that because it isn't about the business, really, it is about who you are and what is your purpose and what do you want to stand for in this world? And therefore, in this case, what do you want your business to stand for? That to me feels like something that everyone could do and get huge value out of, for all the crying that occurs, you know, during that process.
Right. And that happens. Like, we used to joke in the Indie Shopography studio that I knew I was doing my job well whenever someone cried, because people would come in and see either, you know, logos or website or whatever, or like hear what it is that we'd taken their information, distilled it down into this thing that they can use. And then just tears would happen. And then they'd walk out and we'd all high five because I did my job right, or whatever it may be. Because it's huge, and there are feelings, and then there's momentum, and there's changing your life in one way or the other. Hopefully always for the better.
Final question from me. What have you got coming up that is really, really exciting for you?
We're writing a book.
We wrote a book.
I can't wait. The book is written. Talk about being nimble and moving fast. Emily and I wrote a book in 3 months, and it will be out in April of 2018. Because we are publishing it traditionally through Running Press, and we're super stoked to be working with them on it. So yeah, we're writing a book. I cannot wait to see it on the best-selling shelf at the airport and in the top charts on Amazon. So making some magic happen there. And our book is called Being Boss. It's a guide for creative entrepreneurs who want to live and work on their own terms. So it's really taking all of the conversations that we've had on the podcast and these, you know, pillars, this foundation of what it means to be being boss, and putting it in a book. So we're talking about things like mindset, habits and routines, establishing boundaries. We're talking about the work aspect of things, and we're talking about the life aspect of things. So we're kind of covering all bases and taking all the conversations that we've had in our podcast and articulating it into a book form.
And we were also really careful while writing this book, whereas our podcast is very geared for creative entrepreneurs. We talk about things like email marketing and pitching yourself to podcasts and those sorts of things. We were very intentional about this book to make sure that we were speaking obviously to creative entrepreneurs, because those are our people, but also people who just want to be boss in their life and work, even if they're working for big companies or corporations, or hopefully even like I also totally dream of like colleges having this book in their libraries or on reading lists, so that college students are reading this and seeing what actually happens next. So it's not just for the creative entrepreneur crowd, but really for anyone who wants to live and work on their own terms.
Yeah, even our editor who works at a publishing house, she was like, oh my gosh, I'm learning so much. She was like, no, wait a second. How would this tool or tactic, specifically the chalkboard method, she was like, how would this apply to my work? And so Emily and I were on a call with her, almost coaching her as to how that kind of tool might work within the context of working in an organization or a corporation or a company. So yes, totally keeping that in mind. You might though read the book and want to quit your job. Don't blame us.
Sorry, not sorry.
Well, I really, really can't wait. I mean, my listeners will know that one of the reasons I started the podcast is because I was struggling so much to write my Punks in Suits book. And so I thought I just need to get some of the ideas out there, because if they wait until the book, they could be waiting till, you know, 2020 or something. So I'm so impressed that you've done it so quickly. And
we were too. I'm not going to play. We were blown away. Our team was like, what? How did you guys do this? And we're like, because of you, because you guys run the show. We were able to just sit and write. But also it was a really great experience writing it with Kathleen. Like the two of us were able to sit down and really knock it out. And everyone always told us like writing a book is the hardest thing you'll ever do. It'll be so painful. All of these things. We had a blast. We had an absolute blast writing this book, and it came out very quickly. The edits were sort of a glorious experience as well. We went into that not knowing what to expect. And I really hope all of the readers think it's great too, because we had an absolute blast writing this book. And because of that, it came out much quicker than even we expected.
Well, I, like I say, I'm so excited for it to come out, and I'm going to be sending it to all my clients and to my friends. And, you know, I'm telling them all about the podcast all the time anyway. They're really bored of me going on about it. So
perfect. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to them for putting up with it.
Exactly. So thank you so much, ladies, for joining me on this. Certainly here, it's very hot and sticky. I don't know about where you are.
Where are you, Blair?
I'm in the west of England, and it's been hot all week, like 30 degrees. I don't know if that seems like a lot to you, but here that is like unheard of. People are complaining. They want it to rain. No one can deal with it.
So, nice. Well, I bet that probably contributes to how fab your hair is. At least when it's warm here, my hair just loves it.
It's huge today. Absolutely huge, my hair.
I love it. That's why I love the heat.
Thank you so much for having us on the show. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
It has.
I hope you really enjoyed listening to the two of them. We had such a great time talking to them, and I was an even bigger fan after we had a chat than I was before. Their book came out in April of this year. It's Being Boss, Take Control of Your Work and Live Life on Your Own Terms, and that's available now on Amazon. So head over there and get yourself a copy. And you can find out more about them at beingboss.com. And of course, follow them on all the usual social media. I'm back in Croatia this coming week, so I'll have a new, fresh show for you soon. Have a great week. Please stay in touch. And with information about how to do that, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
To hear from you, you can get all the episodes of this show, plus read the blog and find out more about our travel adventure at www.brilliantgamble.com. Sign up to the newsletter and get an advance notice of the classes and programs Mummy is running. Plus, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Brilliant Gamble. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take a brilliant gamble of their own. Bye!